Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Del challenges the status quo, questions everything, and empowers you to return to your core beliefs to make your life better. If you're ready to hear the truth and get your roadmap to the lifestyle you really want, the next hour will change your life. And now, your host, self-made millionaire, national award-winning investor of the year, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. Today is Tell Del Tuesday, and we have another great guest with us here. We have Terry Cantwell out of North Bend, Washington. That's the state, Washington. And we're happy to have him here. Terry, welcome to the show.
Well, good morning, Del. Thanks for having me on.
I want to get into the inspiration that you had to get into this stuff from the beginning. Tell us a little bit about yourself before you got into real estate, before you found Lifestyles, what you were doing, because you did quite a bit of traveling, it looks like, for your job or whatever. Tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get into the inspiration that got you started.
Sure, Del. I started out a CNC machinist, and been doing that pretty much all my life. About the age of 40, I got a permanent migrant visa to Australia, lived there for 2 years, where I worked for Panavision Australia, making components for movie cameras. Then I decided to come back to the States and moved around a bit, wound up at Boeing for the last 13 years, and was looking at retirement. And as I was coming home, I'd be driving home, I'd listen to you on the radio. And it just kept on, it really just like held me. And I was thinking, wow, if I could do this in 5 years or less, that would be really great, as opposed to my original plan of working till I was 70 and maxing out Social Security.
So let's get a little more information, because I've not had you on the show before. Are you married or single?
I'm married.
Kids?
I'm a stepfather of two fine boys. One's about 39, the other one's about 31. And they're both out of the house, and we've got a 80-pound yellow lab.
I laugh. I wish we had one.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
We have many. All right. So moving along here now, it's interesting to me that you went to Australia, then you came back, then you worked here for 13 years, and then something stimulated you to start thinking about retirement. What age was that? What age are you now, and we can back into it or whatever?
Well, today I'm 64, and I was always saying, like, if I could have gone out at 55, I would have, but money just wasn't there. And I'd always been diligent on using the 401k plans and, you know, spent my 20s in night school and worked with a couple of financial planners. And I said, I was about 60, and I said, well, what would happen if I went out today? He said, well, you'd have $35,000 a year, and you'd be out of money by the time you're about, you know, 77. I was like, well, my father lived 89, my mother 92. I just said, this is unacceptable. I said, I've got to find something else.
Well, the obvious something else is you can work longer.
Yeah, but, you know, when you're doing, you know, you're a blue collar, you're doing, like, physical labor, where a lot of times with my job it would be, you know, using a crane, putting material on hooks and putting them on a machine. Just 64, I was getting pretty beat up, and I said, there isn't going to be very much left of me. I said, I might just retire and, you know, just I have to be content to sit in a chair because my body was shot, you know?
Hey, I can relate to that. At 64 years of age myself, I've done many shows about how the body changes radically past age 50. And I've always asked people, how can you work like that hard? I've always wondered how people could work that hard at an age. I'm finding it just that hard just to get up and get excited about, you know, moving around. So that's an interesting point. Let's go back here now, because you've done a lot. I'm trying to add up these numbers in my head here. It looks like over 500, maybe 600, between 500 and 600 units in just a short period of time, joined up in 2019. Yeah. So that's quite a bit of a blast right there. You really moved in and moved in fast. Let's go back to the conversation with the financial planner. Let me be a fly on the wall in that conversation, and then what did you and the wife talk about after that?
Well, really, just that we had to find another way. Just said that this is crazy. I had a full CNC machine shop in my garage, and I was working on an invention, and I was thinking, well, if I can make this invention, I'm thinking of work. You know, I could make a lot of money. But truth of the matter is, what you find out is, if you go and you make your own invention, the hard part, making the invention, is the easy part. And I was just running out of time. I just said, you know, this just isn't going to work. So I said, I looked at it and I said, real estate's worked so well; it's made so many millionaires. I said, I got to give this a try. And my wife was reluctant to get started in that, but I more or less dragged her to the meeting and that, and she bought into it.
Yeah, it's always interesting to see how the other half of the family picks up on something that you lit up on. So as you got into this thing, what was your first response when you came to the two-day seminar? Did you have an aha moment there?
Yes. At the end of the first day of the two-day seminar, I was looking at it and I just said, I want to do this. And so I had a home equity line of credit, and I could move some money around, and so I could come up with the $20,000 to become a passive investor, because just at my age, I just really didn't want to take on the task of going single family and building up. And I had, you know, pretty good reserves put away in my 401k plan. So I said, let's approach this, go to be passive investors, and between Social Security, small Boeing pension, and the distributions from the lifestyles, I'm going to have a pretty good life in retirement.
And so you took action. How long did it take you before you purchased your first investment?
It was just under a year, I think, because I believe I joined in May, and there's a bit of coursework to becoming a passive investor. You really have to educate yourself. But I'd say it's roughly equivalent to about a 4 or 5 credit hour college course. And, you know, it took a lot of time, you know, a lot of time to do it, sit in my office and that. And then came time to, you know, do the stuff with getting in contact with the lead investors. And it got kind of frustrating for a while, because all of a sudden I found myself saying, you know, gee, when am I going to get a deal? I sent all these letters out and nobody's responding. But I go to the events and people said, don't worry, Terry, pretty soon you're going to have more deals than you've got money. And it pretty much seems to be that way.
It's funny how it happens like that, doesn't it? It really is. Because it takes a while for all the effort that you put out to turn around, but once it does and you get on all those lists, then, man, you're turning stuff down every day. I get emails every single day. It blows my mind. So when you decided to do this and you decided you were going to go after a passive deal, I see the people you invested with. You've got some good lead investors there. Which did you think was more important, the deal or the lead investor, as you went looking?
Oh, absolutely the lead investor, you know, because one thing I've learned, whether a person is a high output person or a low output person, you'll have like high output people and low output people in any organization. It turns out that they're both dealing with the same situations. It's pretty rare that you say, well, somebody just always gets into a bad situation, that generally the high output people are always high output.
They get it done.
Exactly. The caliber of the lead investor is the most important thing, without question.
The deals that you got into, let me see. Well, we don't have time to go into that. My next question for you when we come back to the deals that you've gotten into, I take it there's 4 big ones. I want to just talk about what type of deals they were and what the expectations were for them once they start paying. So we'll pick that up when we get back. For the rest of you out there, hang in here. We're going to talk with Terry Cantwell about his 4 real estate transactions that brought him almost 600 units. We'll be right back with the Del Walmsley Radio Show.
Bye. Lifestyles Unlimited Executive Vice President, Business Consultant, and Successful Real Estate Investor Lynn Murrow on the critical difference between those who succeed and those who fail.
Whether you have a small business, whether you are running a division of a large corporation, whether you're a CEO of a Fortune 100 company listening to us right now, or whether you work for somebody else, you have an area of responsibility and you are presented with a novel challenge by a novel virus that's going on right now. And the key to all of that is keeping your head up and looking for opportunity when what you want to do is curl up in a ball and go to sleep. And that is the critical difference between people who succeed right now and people who fail.
Lifestyles Unlimited has been helping people succeed since 1990. Join us for our free online real estate workshop and learn the 7 principles we teach to run our business and provide for our families. Register at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Welcome back. Now here's some more unconventional wisdom to set you free from the man on a mission to retire America, one person at a time, Del Walmsley.
Welcome back to Del Walmsley Radio Show. With me here today is Terry Cantwell out of North Bend, Washington. And he currently has purchased into 4 different deals. He's only been with us about a year, a little over a year. And he jumped right in and got started and purchased 4 really nice deals coming right out of the blocks. So as we look at this thing here now, Terry, the first deal you jumped in with, what was it about that deal that you liked?
Just struck me as very professional. He'd had a long, been in several deals and a great performer. I think I'd heard him on the radio show and that, and he sent me an email and said, I've got a deal. Are you interested? And I absolutely went for it. And you get a lot of good information when, these deals come through as to the area, how much employment is around there. And that, and you're thinking to yourself, yeah, this would be a good place to buy because the people that will be renting will probably have decent jobs.
So you went from Alabama to Houston for your next purchase. And what were your thought processes as you started investing? It looks like you've been in, I'm just going to name them off, Mobile, Alabama, Houston, Texas, Atlanta, Georgia, and San Antonio, Texas. Quite the diversified portfolio. What is your thought? Was that intentional or that just what happened to come up to you while you were first looking?
It is what came up, but I wouldn't want to be invested all in one city. It would make more sense to move your money around and that. And, especially... with what happened with the COVID crisis too, that was been a factor because the way that the way things are done with Lifestyles coming in and buying an underperforming property and getting rid of the non-paying people, improving the property, COVID really put a wrench in the works on that for a lot of people.
Well, it definitely put a wrench in the ability to turn properties around. I mean, when they're not letting you evict people. You obviously can't get rid of the bad tenants and put in the new ones. So that process point had to have been slowed over the last 8 months tremendously, right?
I've got one property, though, totally unaffected.
Really?
Yeah, everybody's paying, and they've even got a waiting list for the ones that are being improved.
Yeah, it's amazing. There are quite a few of them, actually, that it didn't affect them very much at all. And some of them are actually doing better. They just happened to be at the right place in the transition that allowed for them to fill back up after they'd emptied it out before it got to the point where you couldn't empty them out. You moved on here. You filled up your portfolio. Now, I want to try to get some transition access here for our listeners because the way you told the story in your resume, I'm not that clear on. So let's talk about these 2 transitional points, if you could share with us. You said that you went in, you got in, and you invested in these 4 properties. You also said you had quite a large chunk in your 401k. And I don't know if you used that money to get into these deals or not, but then you also said later your company gave you the opportunity to step away and get bailed out of there, which would have given you more money and more access to your 401k. Can you kind of walk everybody through as to how you funded these 4 properties and your transition from where you were when you started to the point you are now? Just timeline kind of thing and what you did.
Yes. On the first property, I pulled some money out of a qualified IRA I had that was outside of Boeing. And so that, you know, that raised my taxable income substantially for 2019. And I also, you know, my mother passed away, and I inherited a little money that was invested. And but the one that you advised me to do, I did a cash out refi of my home, which gave me about an extra $180,000 that I could take and invest, and that was a non-taxable event. So I was able to put that money to work, and so right now I've got about $350,000 in four deals, and I've got be looking at selling my home. Contractors are in here right now, and I've also got the all my Boeing 401k money, which is about $250,000, that I'll be pulling that out, you know, but the timing's going to have to be correct on that for just, you know, for tax reasons right now.
Yeah, are you still working now, or have they given you the severance yet?
Yeah. Oh, they gave me the severance check October 2nd. I went out. It was a voluntary layoff, and they gave me 1 week of pay for every year of service, and so that was just a super deal, and that was good because they're going to have to cut some serious meat around there with everything that's happened. And it was better that if I went out, some of the younger people could stay. I planned on going out in March anyway, so that opportunity just came at the perfect time.
You know, they say luck is proper preparation meets opportunity. What do you think of that statement in your life?
So true. So true, Del. It's having yourself mentally prepared, thinking, well, if I had the money or this opportunity came along at the right time, I could do this or that. And as what I call it, I say, you know, you got to be ready to pull the trigger. You know, you have yourself, you know, ready for these opportunities to take advantage of them when they come along. So, yeah, absolutely. Luck is when preparation and opportunity meet.
No doubt. So right now you still got more money you're working with. You're just timing it all right now. You got to get through the timing of the taxation. You've also are working around the change in your lifestyle. What is change in your lifestyle? Because I was reading all the stuff you're doing. You're like, it's like they'd let a rabid dog out, you know, get out there and play.
Well, thank you. I took the voluntary layoff October 2nd, and we dove right into doing a rehab of my house and prep it for the sale. So, right now, the exterior was fine, but the interior just needed a full paint from top to bottom and new carpeting and probably some remodeling in the kitchen. And more or less following the single-family strategy of lifestyles of pretty much fix everything and put it on the market. Well, I mean, with lifestyles, you go and you rent it, but I'm just going to fix everything and then put this house in the market and get in the RV and go down the road.
Well, having said go down the road, we're going to pick that up when we come back the other side of the break here, because we've got a lot to talk about on that end of it. We'll be right back here with Terry Cantwell and the Del Walmsley Radio Show.
Some more unconventional wisdom to set you free from the man on a mission to retire America one person at a time, Del Walmsley.
Welcome back to Del Walmsley Radio Show. With me here today is Terry Cantwell out of North Bend, Washington. And he's got four apartment complexes between 500 and 600 units. I can't get the exact number here unless I get out my calculator. And he's sharing his story with us. He just joined about a year, let's see, May of 19. So a little over a year with us now. And he's already at the point where his company had offered him an opportunity to take early retirement. And he felt like he was in the position that could be accomplished. And so, Terry, you jumped out of the company and immediately started working on your house. I think it's a unique story. I'd like to hear your side of it because I've seen it many, many, many times. The exact same story you're about to tell. Of course, yours is personal, of what you plan to do once you sell that house.
We're just going to get in our RV, my wife and the dog and I, and our plan is to head south to get some warmer weather because I'm just going to give skiing a miss this year. It's kind of hard to ski out of the RV. We'll be full-time in the RV and looking around America and figuring out just where do we want to live. You know, it's, I'm leaning towards a mountain state. But we'll have to see what happens.
You know, I don't know if you ever heard Johnny Lama Ridgway, who used to be on the radio with me, but he's one of our consultants for many years, about 10 years. Took to a motor home and took off and never came back. And we've got two or three, four other really prominent people that, you know, just said, I'm hanging it up, I'm on the road. What's the allure of just taking off and seeing the countryside on the road like that?
I guess it's just very relaxing, I think, you know, that you go to a place and you say, gee, this is beautiful. You know, it's we found places that you could stay and get full hookup and meet people that are, you know, full-timing it. And that could be as much as $100 a night. And then we found other places that were run by the Department of Forest Management. And it was like, you know, $20 a night. If you're over 65, 10. And it's not a lot of facilities there, but, you know, it's so quiet, so peaceful. It's just a really wonderful way to be that you find yourself, you don't really need television. I found myself with my Kindle reading The Richest Man in Babylon and just enjoying the time.
You don't have one of those satellite dishes on the top of your van that turns around in circles and you watch TV no matter where you're at?
Not really a priority with me. I enjoy it when I'm home and that, but I'm also happy to get away from it for a while. You know, that's. But you never know. I could go a little more upmarket on my RV. That could happen.
Well, you're quite the outdoor guy. Have you always been the outdoor guy?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I just started skiing when I was about 12 years old, and you know, riding bicycles and you know, motorcycles and. Did some sailing and that, and just really do love being in the outdoors, probably because I've always worked inside, you know, in like a, you know, kind of like a dark, dirty, noisy environment. So when I get done with work, I really liked being outside.
I saw somewhere in this thing that you had competed in both sailing and motorcycles or something.
It was all at an amateur level. I road raced motorcycles for about 8 seasons, and thing was, you know, I was at the amateur club level, and I was pretty much stuck in third place. So, you know, once I got to about 31, I just said it's time to stop doing this, you know, and I had a couple injuries along the way. And competitive sailing out of Buffalo, New York on, you know, on different racing boats for about 10 years. That was just a lot of fun that every Wednesday night you'd go out there and you'd get on Lake Erie and see the Buffalo skyline behind you and just really focus on making the boat go fast. And it was really quite enjoyable. I'm so glad I did it.
How about the wife? If she get out there with that kind of stuff with you?
Oh, well, my wife, she's not really big on the skiing and that, but she loves to paint. So what we end up doing is we go someplace and I might go out and go skiing with a dog and or go out riding on a motorcycle and that. And we just set her up with her easel at a nice spot, and she paints a landscape or, you know, paints somebody's dog, stuff like that. And, you know, she's really happy with that. We got a nice mix that way.
I'm glad you brought that up because I did want to ask you, how do you go skiing with your dog? Explain that one to me.
Oh, it's a sport called ski-joring, which roughly translates, I think, from Norwegian called ski driving. And you put a harness on the dog and a harness on yourself, and you've got to have voice control over the dog. So, you know, once the dog masters a couple of basic commands of, like, you know, go forward, slow down, left, right, and I skate ski on a trail, and he pulls me.
What does that mean, skate ski? What is that? Just small 1 foot skis, or how's it?
Oh, okay. Skate skis are they're a cross country ski. They're very narrow, a little shorter, and that, and you kind of do like a skating action where you push the ski like kind of like in a diagonal way behind you, just like you know how an ice skater moves his ski.
Yeah, yeah, I understand.
Do the same thing with cross country skis. You know,
do you have poles?
Oh yes, yes. Absolutely.
And you make that poor dog pull you, huh?
Yeah. Well, I'm skating behind him, but he's pretty excited to go.
Honestly, I bet that dog loves it, huh? I bet the dog just goes crazy for that.
He's pretty happy. He's an energetic guy, and the thing is that you got to have a dog that's energetic enough to pull you, but also willing to obey some commands, which is it really takes a lot of time and dedication. My neighbors thought I was crazy because I was training them, and I'd have them dragging a 4x4 down the road with a harness while I ran next to them, yelling commands, you know, and they'd see me with a dog going down the street in the dark.
I can see them. Bobby's doing it again. You need to call the cops. He's torturing that poor dog. I can see it now.
Yeah. Yep.
Unbelievable. Now that you got this time again, you got all this time off, what do you see as the greatest accomplishment and goal for the rest of your life? How do you see that? Do you have a plan for what I call now, after reading a book that I just started reading? It's called The Third Section of Your Life. You know, we did the school section up to the 20s, did the work section through the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and now we're in our 60s, 70s, and 80s. It's the third segment of our life. It's a different season. What is your greatest goal for the third season of your life?
Stay healthy, the most important thing, because without your health, you don't have a whole lot. That's been my focus. I just love getting up in the morning, doing my stretching routine, eating breakfast, and then I go out and I exercise the dog and that. And, that's just something that's so important to me anyway. And that's what I look forward to, that now instead of getting up at 4 a.m., in the morning, and that to go to work. Now I'm able to sleep until about 6, take my time, do a little calisthenic routine, and then get on with my day.
Do you do any cardiovascular work?
Yeah, that would come in with the skiing and that, and the bicycling. Yeah, that's one of those things of I just wish I had more time to do more of that.
I'm the same age, 64, and I just read this book, and I thought I was going to live to 65. None of my family members lived past that, so that was my goal. But now that I know I'm there and I'm alive and I'm still healthy, I've started picking up a lot of cardiovascular work as opposed to heavy weight training and so forth. Because, again, we're just looking for the fitness and the health and so on and so forth. Hey, we're going to take a short break now, okay? And we'll come back and finish this up after that break. We'll be right back with the Terry Cantwell and the Del Walmsley Radio Show.
Friends, how many of you out there right now believe you have a plan? I followed the conventional plan for years, and then the conventional plan blew up in my face. I wonder how many of you can relate to that exact same thing. The real question is, how many of you have actually figured out how to turn that thing around and make it happen?
Do you have a plan? Lifestyles Unlimited has one for you. It's worked for countless others. Retire in 5 years or less. Come learn more. Join us for our live online workshop. Register at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Welcome back. Now here's some more unconventional wisdom to set you free from the man on a mission to retire America, one person at a time, Del Walmsley.
Welcome back to Del Walmsley Radio Show. With me here today is Terry Cantwell and of, North Bend, Washington. And Terry is recently retired. He only joined Lifestyles a year and a half ago or so. And he recently is taking a retirement package and getting ready to take on the world, travel around in his RV until he and the wife decide where they want to settle down. As you get ready for all this and you set yourself up, what types of things would a couple your age start to think about when you're talking about total retirement and travel, constant travel and stuff like that? What kind of things do you have to worry about set up?
You know, getting a vehicle that, you know, I'll be comfortable driving, moving down the road, and, you know, parking in tight spots and that, which I don't have a lot of experience with that. But, you know, that's, I think the main thing with RVs is just to kind of keep it simple and, you know, figuring out what kind of places do you want to stay. You know, there's different things they call like boondocking, which essentially you stay like stuff like on Bureau of Land Management land and that, and or National Forest Service land where you don't pay, but you know, there aren't any hookups there, that kind of thing. But you can meet some pretty interesting people in those places too. You know, it's there's a whole culture behind it that I'm just kind of learning about, which is I'm looking forward to.
What about the insurance? How do you process the need for insurance when you've quit your job and you're traveling around the country? I'm talking about health insurance, because many times health insurance policies, they don't actually travel very well. Have you found one that does travel?
Actually, no, I haven't. That's something I have to get into, that we're going to be going into Medicare.
Uh-huh.
Because my wife is already 65. I'll be 65 in March. And my Boeing plan is good up to that point, but that's part of the deal. I'm good for like, you know, 6 months. But looking for health insurance and health insurance that travels with you from state to state, that's a bridge I have to cross.
Yeah, that's the first one that came to my mind, was cause, not because it's hard to get insurance, I have insurance, but it's just because the travelability of it doesn't seem to work out very well. You know, you have in-house providers and non-in-house providers, so that I always question, and I'm sure somebody knows that answer, but I don't, and I was hoping you maybe could share it with everybody.
Apparently there's different outfits where you can pay for a service and you get a post office box, an actual address. You're technically living in Texas, because I noticed all these guys had Texas plates, and I was like, why do you have Texas plates in Washington? And I guess even though they're living in their RV, they're technically living in the state of Texas.
Well, there's other reasons for that that would be beneficial also. I mean, the income tax rates here, or the taxation rates, are different than they are in those liberal states like Washington.
Absolutely.
And Oregon and so on and so forth. I would much prefer to be from Texas if possible that way. So maybe that's part of it. Let's talk on something else here for a second. Usually I ask people about what did the people at their work think about them retiring early, but in my mind, you basically retired what I would consider within the realm of normalcy, between age 60 and 70 type of deal. So it's not really something people look at you like, oh my God, you crazy dude, why'd you retire? But what about the family members or friends or neighbors or relatives that found out that you've put your major investments into real estate as opposed to the stock market or, you know, bonds or, you know, the traditional type investments? Have anybody given you pushback or thoughts on that?
I'm glad you mentioned that. I've tried to share this with a lot of my, you know, old friends back east and that, and they're all kind of reluctant. They just say like, or they might say that I just don't want to start anything new at this point, or, you know, I'm just too busy, or I'm too tired to be able to do it. And, you know, I wish I could have that light bulb go off for them, you know, but they just didn't spend, they didn't spend about a year listening to you every day on the drive home.
No doubt. So what about your kids? Any interest from those children? Two boys, I guess it was?
Yeah, my younger one, I've been talking with him about it. He has some interest, and we're going to see if we can, I might end up doing a single family unit, giving that a try, and like to try and get him involved and just have him see how it happens, because anyone can benefit from this, but especially for my younger one where he is, this could really be a life-changing event for him.
Yeah, I was blessed that I found it when I was 27 and a half, 28, and by the time I was 34, I was out. So it was lucky in my life. It gave me a lot of years to be able to go around and do what I wanted to do, where I wanted to do it, and whom I wanted to do it with, and still have enough money to enjoy life. So, yeah, the younger you can get them involved, the longer the benefit term should be or would be. So you've got it all set up. You're ready to go. What would be the one thing you would leave? You only got 30 seconds left. Someone, you talk to them. 30 seconds or less, what would you tell somebody sitting on the sideline waiting to pull the trigger?
Do a 2-day seminar and if he feels right for you, go for it. Because the conventional way of just doing, doing retirement of like getting that pile of money and then just trying not to spend it for the rest of your life, there's so much more opportunity available and there's so many better ways to do it. And Lifestyles really is just, it's the one that made it happen.
Thank you, Terry. We appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your story with the rest of you out there. Remember this, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Del Wamsley Radio Show, teaching you the opposite of everything you've been taught so you can obtain the results you've never obtained. Join us 7 days a week. Can't get enough? Visit DellOnTheRadio.com to listen to the Del Wamsley Radio Show, access past show podcasts, and join the conversation.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Wamsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Wamsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Wamsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Wamsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.